Technorama episode 525, Singing in the Acid Rain.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I know. I'm here for the umpteenth time. Just tell me where I can find some answers.
Over there, in the media corner.
42.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time tuning in, listening, joining us, thank you very much. We appreciate it. If you are returning, welcome back. Thank you for giving us your time. As I said, I am Chuck Tomasi, and joining me as always is my wonderful cohort, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hey, I'm open. Over here.
Fumble. We fumble this whole show. Oh, we got your little picture in a picture in your picture. We don't need two Craigs on the screen. There, let's take care of that. That was fun.
Need that infinity mirror.
Thank you for joining us live on the stream. These are the people who really don't care about football, and that's fine with us. If you're a geek, I'm working on a promo about something like that. And I neglected to put up the question of the week on Facebook this weekend. I apologize. I dropped the ball on that one. Where is it? There. We can have some sound effects once in a while. Which doesn't explain where Ben and Keith are, because I know they're not big Super Bowl fans.
Well, yeah. Where are they?
Gentlemen.
I'm calling them out. I'm actually going to call them out now. It's been way too long.
It has been way too long.
They can't still be coughing.
No, they're not. We actually saw them at the podcaster meetup on the 24th, 25th, whenever that was.
That's right. I saw Gary had a picture with him.
Gary Lindros was in town. Yep. But that's okay. We are going to proceed the old Chuck and Craig show. Let's go into the history segment then.
Hey, we started this together. We're going to end it together.
That's not a good sign. On this day in history for February 7, 2018, this is the 38th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 327 days remaining in 2018. It was on this date in 1907. That launched the Mud March, the first procession organized by the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, or the NUWSS.
And February 7th, 1940, the second full-length animation feature from Walt Disney was Pinocchio. It premiered.
It's-a me, Pinocchio.
Yeah, I almost said Pinocchio just to say it.
Mr. Panucci.
That's right.
It was also on this date in 1984 that during space shuttle mission STS-41B, astronauts Bruce McCandless II and Robert L. Stewart make the first untethered spacewalk using the Manned Maneuvering Unit, or MMU, which is not anything to do with the sweatshirt I'm wearing from NMU.
I'm telling you, an untethered spacewalk just scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, one slip and you're gone.
Yep. Also, on February 7th, 1990, the Central Committee of the Soviet Communist Party agrees to give up its monopoly on power as part of the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
The dissolution? They were dissolved?
They're disillusioned. Yeah.
It was a disillusionment. Yeah. On February 7th, 1997, Next merges with Apple Computer, starting the path to Mac OS X. Hey. I remember that. That doesn't seem so long ago. That was 21 years ago.
Yeah.
I can do math. Happy birthday goes out of the state to American blacksmith and businessman, founder of the Deere and Company, John Deere, born on this date in 1804.
And Charles Dickens, an English novelist and critic, was born on the same date in 1812. I wasn't expecting the word critic there. Okay.
Critic? Oh, he must have been critical of something at some point. American author Laura Ingalls Wilder was born on this date in 1867.
And Thomas Andrews, Irish shipbuilder and businessman, designed the RMS Titanic. I don't know if I'd want that on my resume.
I was thinking the same thing.
It was born on the same date in 1873.
G.H. Hardy, the English mathematician and geneticist, was born 141 years ago today.
And Bill Hoest, American cartoonist, was born on the same date in 1926.
You jumped like three people down.
Did I?
You forgot Joseph Algernon Pierce, the Canadian astrophysicist and astronomer, who was born on that same date in 1893.
Okay. Here you go. I'll take this one.
You just didn't want the Russian engineer. Come on, admit it.
Russian engineer, founder of Antonov Aircraft Company, Oleg Konstantinovich was born 112 years ago today.
I think that's the closest I've ever heard you come.
Konstantinovich? Yeah.
Konstantinovich. Yeah. All right. Like Constantinople. Konstantinovich. That's it. Where were we? Also born on the same day in 1932, American colonel, pilot, and astronaut Alfred Worden.
And also turning 83 today is American businessman and politician Herb Kohl.
I remember him. He's still alive.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, he's 83.
From Wisconsin. Yeah. You know Kohl's department store? They're also one of our customers at work.
I was wondering if that was that's related.
Okay. Yes, that's the Kohl. American singer-songwriter and guitarist Garth Brooks is 56.
Wow. I thought he might be just a hair older than that, but okay. An American actor, director, producer, screenwriter, everything under the sun, Chris Rock, born on this date in 1965.
Chris Rock! Chris Rock is going to put this podcast down! Sorry, that was a terrible Chris Rock.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the zebra from Madagascar.
It's more like Kid Rock.
Or James Brown, we're not sure.
Right.
Happy birthday to our listeners from the birthday calendar. Chad W. Smith from Chattanooga, Tennessee on the 7th. Also on the 7th, Brian, the big BS in PA from Williamsport, PA. We're getting into the letter things again. Uh-oh. Jan Scott from Yorkshire, UK on the 8th. And on the 9th is podcast Mike Wills. We need the ding from podcast Mike Wills podcast from Minnesota. Burr, cold, Super Bowl, Minnesota. The 10th has two birthdays from Zach Agulian in Appleton, Wisconsin. I miss Zach. He was always fun to hang around. And also Drace, a.k.a. Sherry from North Dakota, which is also pleasantly warm this time of year. Just kidding. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name on there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. We wish you the happiest of birthdays. Even if you're not on the calendar right now, we also wish you the happiest of birthdays. Wishing you a wonderful year in the year ahead. That's the way it was on this day in history for February 7th, 2018. And I think we're just about on that last cycle as it goes up.
Do I hear him coming in? Oh,
no, it's not. We got one more go around, so I'm just going to cut him off.
Hey, I know North Dakota is cold. I've watched Fargo.
How cold is it?
It's so cold. I won't do there. It's been cold here. I don't care what you say, Chuck.
All right, we have some bad news, nobody. Here, let's try that again.
Bad news, nobody.
The bad news is that the infamous Atari player got his title stripped. I don't know if he was doping or what. Let's find out.
he was in with Lance Armstrong.
In 1982, video score chaser Todd Rogers supposedly being the key word here, set a world record time of 5.51 seconds in the Atari 2600 racing game Dragster. Last year, speedrunners called that score into question. After a lengthy arbitration process, Rogers' score was removed from Twin Galaxies, an organization that tracks video game records and high scores. Quote, based on the complete body of evidence presented in the official dispute thread, Twin Galaxies administrative staff had unanimously decided to remove all of Todd Rogers' score as well as ban him from participating in our competitive leaderboards, Twin Galaxies staff said on their message boards. The presented software analysis model concluded that achieving score times of less than 5.57 seconds was not possible under standard and normal play conditions. As of this morning, the Guinness Book of World Records officially recognizes Todd Rogers' Dragster record as the longest-held video game world record. His score has sat comfortably at the top of the Twin Galaxies leaderboards for decades, although observers have long questioned whether it was really possible. Dragster, a game about racing a dragster car to the finish line as fast as possible, is completable in such short amount of time because it simulates the speed of a road race. Completing a race takes anywhere from a few seconds to 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played this game before?
Oh, years ago. I mean, I barely remember it, to be honest with you.
You know how you can make it take a minute? You just go as slow as possible.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, look, I'm checking out the scenes. The scenery.
Right. Yeah. Didn't you ever play games like that? If the idea was to go as fast as possible, we would always take things. How slowly could you go?
Yeah. I tell you, same kind of mindset. I had a friend that was deep into NASCAR, and he brought over his, I forget which version of the NASCAR racing game, but we had two network computers in our house, which, you know, at the time that was something else. My roommate had his computer there. I had mine. We had, of course, coax, you know, and the computers and network. We would play the network version of this NASCAR game. And it was fun for a while, and then after a while, he would get frustrated. I know he got frustrated with me. I'm sure he did. But I turned the car around and started driving backwards on the track. And you could see the car start to split, and yeah, it was. I'm sure he was seriously upset. John Miller Jr. knows what I'm talking about. Our friend Dwayne. Yeah, but anyway, same idea.
Alrighty. Do you have solar panels? I couldn't remember if you got those or not.
No, I considered them, and I kind of threw this in here because of you.
Yes, I saw this article. Go ahead and read, and I'll comment.
So you know, we talked a little bit in the past about Tesla's solar panels that look like regular shingles or even the terracotta roof that you would have on your house.
Mm-hmm.
But Tesla is now, they're planning a major expansion of its solar division at Home Depot, embarking on a critical test of the mainstream appeal of its renewable energy products. The tech pioneer, best known for his electric cars, is beginning to roll out Tesla-branded selling spaces. Okay. At 800...
What intimidates you? My mother?
Oops, hang on. Stupid autoplay videos.
Take a look at the roofs of these four houses.
I'm looking.
Testing spaces in the retailer store. Like if you,
yeah.
You know, sometimes they have a mobile company or whatever in there in a little tiny booth. Anyway, so the company confirmed to Bloomberg, the areas which will be outfitted during the first half of the year are staffed by Tesla employees and can demonstrate the solar panels and the Powerwall battery.
I want a Powerwall.
What was that?
I want a Powerwall.
Well, it makes sense for you because you have solar panels.
Right. So during the day, you can charge up the power wall, and at night, you can use the battery power from that rather than pulling off the grid.
Yeah. So Lowe's, the second largest home improvement chain after Home Depot, has been in discussion with Tesla about selling its products. Some people familiar with the situation. At some point, Home Depot may also offer Tesla a much-anticipated solar roof, which is said... said some of the people who asked not to be identified, but we're going to talk about them here.
Sure.
Deliberations are private. The Tesla and Lowe's and Home Depot declined to comment on those plans. So that's pretty cool. I think it's actually a great product from everything I've read, which is mostly, honestly, the Tesla.
I still don't know how much a Powerwall is, and I suspect there'd be different models. You know, do you want the 12K version or the 25K version or whatever they measure them in? There will be different models for different costs.
I'm trying to remember. I saw a little infographic and it was like, I want to say it was like, 7,000 for the battery. It's at the bottom at the website. So if you pay for the solar panels, the additional $7,000 for the battery.
Well, I didn't pay for the solar panels. They're leased.
Right. I assume the battery's around $7,000.
Okay. We'll see. I'll let you know.
Hey, some of the things I like about the panels that I didn't know about before, not that it it's really a big impact on me, but maybe, you know, I keep talking about when that picture you sent me, a selfie of you up on your roof, scraping the ice off your roof. Do you know these solar panels, you can also heat the roof with them? It's a feature. It'll heat the roof to get ice and stuff off.
Really? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it was in the video that you stopped. But I watched the video and went, that's actually kind of neat. Not that I really care. Snow is on my roof about maybe at the most a week's worth of time in the year. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I don't need to worry about it either.
Yeah, but they look pretty pretty sturdy as far as, because they're made out of some ceramic glass and it can take some impacts.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, I would worry about, you know, hail maybe, but anyway, it's pretty cool.
I don't have to worry about that either.
No. Not really.
I just got to, like, worry about dust.
Yeah. Every once in a while we have a hail, but I've never seen it anything big enough to really do damage. I've seen, like, I've seen little pellets, you know.
Really? Oh, we used to get hail all the time in Wisconsin that would damage our roofs, and that's usually how we got a new roof.
I think the smallest or the big... Now, it's happened because all the houses in our neighborhood have been repaired as before we moved in because of hail. But the last time I saw hail, and I have barely ever seen it, it was like little pellets, you know, about the size of my tip of my pinky.
Not big enough.
No. And if that dents your car, you might want to look at a new car.
Speaking of dented cars, we had a real piece of work when we went skiing a couple of years ago in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
This thing, they said, oh, you get one of the three Toyota Corollas or something, Camrys. I think it was a Camry.
Right. Said,
you get one of the three in the parking lot. We go out there. One is driving away. One has a sign on the windshield wiper that says out of order. And we get the third one that is, looks like it was bullet riddled from a Marvel movie, but it was hail damaged. So I took a picture and I went back in. I said, now just so we're square, it was like this when I got it. Okay. And she says, yes.
Hey, I want a freaking Mustang. I want a freaking four wheels.
Well, as it turns out, we got snowed in and couldn't leave till we were supposed to leave on Tuesday. We finally drove out of there on Thursday and drove all the way back to Arizona. And I took this hail damaged car back to the Phoenix airport and I said, it's done. It's just, the guy looks at me like, what did you do to this car?
I didn't do it.
I felt like a little bit like Axel Foley when he drove his wrecked up Nova into the nice country club.
I was actually getting a picture of, you know, Steve Martin and Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Yeah. Or Smokey and the Bandit, the police car.
Yeah, right.
Ah, great vehicles of the cinema.
Yeah. Take the roof right off. Yeah.
This here's evidence. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back with our Remember When and Media Corner segments. I think we got something in the Geek Library, too. So hang out.
Okay. Smoke them if you got them.
No, don't got them, so I'm not smoking them. Be right back.
This is Bob. Before, Bob relied on the internet to enhance his geek status. After using Technorama for natural geek enhancement, Bob is rolling his 20-sided die, reciting Holy Grail lines, and answering Star Trek trivia with the best of them. And he has a happy missus at the home, too. Technorama for natural geek enhancement. Only available at chuckchat.com.
Hey, this is Colin Ferguson from Sci-Fi's Eureka. I play Sheriff Jack Carter. And now back to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Well, he used to play Jack Carter.
Hey, you know what's funny is I walked in the living room. My wife was streaming a show that had Craig Ferguson. I went, oh, I know him.
You mean Colin Ferguson?
I mean Colin Ferguson, excuse me. So I said, I met him before. She goes, you did? I kind of explained how we were standing in line, and he was talking to everybody and really working the crowd.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. And how he corrected the guy, the cosplayer behind us.
How to roll up his cuffs.
Yeah. You know, I still follow that guy on Facebook. The guy that was behind us, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I took his picture and I had to get it to him. So, I follow him on Facebook. I can't remember his name, but I see his picture pop up every once in a while. I think he went to Puerto Rico to do some work there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Also interesting are the people that join us here on Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern Time, watching us live on Facebook. Craig, who would some of those people be?
John Miller Jr., the only one. Actually, no. Fred Smith, my old high school buddy.
Tim Elliott was there for a little while.
Yep. And
that looks like it for tonight.
Those are the three people that don't watching football.
It is Super Bowl Sunday as we record this, but you may be watching it on YouTube later. Thank you very much. And you may be watching this on Facebook. Thank you very much as well. Or listening to this in podcast form. You can find all this information out and more over at our website at chuckchat.com. If you want to get in touch with us, hey, there's a number right there on the screen, right down there. 707-530-2428 is our listener line. Did we have any lit voicemail this week, Craig?
Yeah, that's
what I thought. All right. The phone line is getting dusty.
Yeah.
We're gonna need a graphic here of like a phone with cobwebs.
The little tumbleweed comes across the screen.
An old rotary phone. Yeah.
No rotary phone.
All right. We have our Remember When segment. Do we still have our music? We do have our music. There it is.
We got to talk over it kind of quickly.
Yeah, we're going to talk over it. We'll fade it down real low.
Get busted.
And I'll see if I can do my NFL announcer voice.
Yes.
When footage of CBS's 1967 coverage of Super Bowl I first emerged from the ashes 7 years ago, sports historians reacted with glee. Not the television show Glee. Long considered one of the holy grails of sportscasting history, the footage found on the set of 2-inch quadruplex videotapes in a dusty Pennsylvania attic provided a rare glimpse at an event once held exclusively in the memories of nearly 62,000 attendees at January afternoon in Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. What followed was a mixed bag of realized hype and disappointment. The NFL went to great lengths to suppress the tapes, claiming copyright infringement. For the next 5 years, the league's lawyer successfully kept Troy Haupt, who discovered the tapes, from releasing more than a few seconds of the footage to the media. Then in 2016, 3 weeks before the kickoff of Super Bowl 50, the NFL suddenly released its own version of the game.
Oh, guess what?
It had cobbled together from extant film reels and audio taken from NBC radio broadcast.
From extant film reels?
That's what it said. Excellent films. The NFL's patchwork version of Super Bowl I broadcast, historians feeling cold. I watched that on YouTube.
Yeah,
you'd see a little video, then there was a little still, but the radio broadcast would keep going. Like, is my bandwidth giving up here or what? It was kind of tough to watch. Well,
didn't they broadcast it and they had somebody commentary?
Yeah,
they did the whole thing.
To broadcast historians, what really mattered was what the game had looked like on TV, not what had occurred on the field. CBS, which famously simulcast Super Bowl I with NBC, had sent just 11 cameras and 2 production trucks to Los Angeles in 67.
That's laughable by today's standards.
Compared to today's 106 cameras and 14 mobile units NBC plans had sent to Minneapolis this weekend. Unlike the NFL Films version, the attic tapes promised an authentic representation of what the late 1960s live television crew could accomplish using what then constituted state-of-the-art equipment. Indeed, the few available clips of the attic tapes, I love that, the attic tapes, which is better than the basement tapes, I guess.
Yeah.
The restored versions of which remain locked away at the Palais Center for Media seem to corroborate what veteran television engineers have known for years. However, modest it may appear to the 21st century eye, CBS's broadcast of Super Bowl I encapsulated the great technology strides taken during one of the most important eras in sportscasting history. Quote, looking at the quality of sports video between the 50s and 60s, you can see major differences, Chuck Ferris, an Emmy Award-winning television engineer and 50-year veteran of the industry, told me, pointing specifically to the development of high-quality and low-weight cameras in the mid-1960s, as well as other innovations like instant replay and longer zoom lenses. Sportscasts of this era provided more interesting coverage and better quality video than contemporary viewers had ever seen. To understand just how far sportscasting had come by the kickoff of Super Bowl I, one must look back into an era when wide-eyed early adopters viewed TV itself as the height of technology. It's witchcraft, I tell ya. They've been doing TV football games since the 30s, which is incredible enough as it seems. And there are some clips. If you follow through the show notes and see what we mean, there's some great pictures of the old style cameras they used to use, both on and off field in the studio, the RCA's popular TK-40, which is the big beast we all seem to see when you'd be watching a television show and they'd show the camera. And it's this big, you know, multi-lensed crazy thing. It's probably what they used to film the original Star Trek.
Probably. Yeah. You know, of all the technologies that they've thrown at the games, I think, you know, some of them stick, some of them don't. But I think the two things that really stuck and I think is useful is why is the dynamic field lines, you know, so you see where the line of scrimmage is and where the first down is. And then
the sky cam.
The sky cam on the cable, because sometimes the views are superfluous, but then there's sometimes it's like, wow, that looks really good, because you can really get down in there. Sometimes it's like
I'm kind of surprised no one's ever done like a punt or a kickoff and hit the sky cam.
I know, right? I'm surprised that never really happened too. Maybe when they're going to kick, they kind of
move it off to the side.
Yeah, because
the wires
whenever they're
still up there.
Yeah,
unless you put it in the far corner, you know, it's like okay, all the way down and all the way right.
Well, does it not work like where there's one? There's two, every two cable. I don't know.
It's kind of like I thought it was like a pen plotter, you know, sort of, you had a horizontal.
Yeah, where the cables would actually be out of the way. You know, when you talk about when it's on a, like for example, if it's in the corner, the cables would technically be out of the way of the field of play, right?
Right. Yeah. Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe if somebody knows, let us know. How can they let us know, Chuck?
They can let us know by getting a hold of us on the listener line, 707-530-2428, or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. Either email or comment on the Facebook page, Technorama Podcast, or the YouTube. Just look for Technorama Podcast there. You know, go to chuckchat.com/Technorama and find all those links. There's Twitter and Facebook and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, you can even call from our Facebook page. There's a big button that says call.
And nobody's ever done that. Be the first in the 52-year Super Bowl history.
I challenge you, listener, to be the first to do this.
And let us know that you did it, too. Otherwise, we're not going to know, because it's the same mailbox that had some.
First time caller from our button.
Let's give a shout out to the patrons. Was that the only story in there? No, we had another one in the Remember One segment. Open source.
Which I love dearly.
A source is a source, of course, of course. And no one can talk to your source. Okay.
The open source. I would
read on.
Not sure if I'm trying to decide if I disagree with this with the title, but open source turns 20, and here's how it all started. I think I understand where this is going, though. In the dead of winter 20 years ago, Netscape, inspired by, in part by the treatise what's that word,
treatise,
anyway, huh,
treatise on Linux and free software.
That's a new word to me. Okay. Inspired by the treatise on Linux and the free software development, released the source code for its Netscape Communicator web browser. The move was unprecedented. This was a publicly traded company that had just reported some disappointing financials, announcing to the world that it would make the core of its product available to thinkers, tinkers, and insatiable curious. Insatiably, and to the insatiable curiously, P people, whatever. I just throw that in there. And over the days that followed, a cadre of software developers and advocates agonized over crucial questions. What should this kind of stuff be called? After some prolonged discussions and a few calls with Netscape, they had their answer. It was garbage. No, I'm just kidding.
You guys don't thus, know. You can't code from anything.
Yeah. So, and thus, 20 years ago, the term open source was born. The open source initiative formed shortly after that. And one of the working group's founders, Bruce Perens, adapted the free software guidelines he wrote for Debian Linux distribution to serve as the official open source definition. In the decades to follow, open source software and the codes have become inextricably.
That's not that hard of a word.
I don't know what my problem is tonight. Inextricably.
you can hand off the ball. I'll take it if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the decades that followed, open source software and code have become inextricably woven into our shared digital lives, even in ways you might not be aware of. Sure, apps like LibreOffice and the GIMP get attention as full-featured replacements for costly proprietary products, and Linux has made truly remarkable progress as a platform of choice in businesses around the world. In those cases, the value of open source is clear. It allowed contributors of different backgrounds and skill levels to collaboratively build valuable software. What most people who buy Android devices, however, probably never think about open source foundation of the software they use. Ditto for people who use WebKit-powered mobile browsers like Safari. The reach of open source code is almost unthinkably broad now, but as the Open Source Initiative celebrates the 20th anniversary of the open source label, we should take some time to remember that this wasn't always the case. That's true. After all, free software isn't exactly a new phenomenon. Its roots stretch back into the computing cultures of the 70s, but were more formally codified in the 80s by legendary hacker Richard Stallman in a manifesto for his then-incomplete GNU operating system. GNU was meant to be a fully Unix-compatible OS available to whoever needed it or whoever wanted to modify it to better suit their needs. This subsequent rise of the free software movement wasn't one necessarily based on the needs of the market. It was an ideological endeavor forged out of the belief that users can and should be able to use, modify, and share programs in a way that provides and protects them or protects those same freedoms for others. Note that this interpretation of the free software doesn't necessarily take price into account. As the saying goes, if it's free, it's free as in freedom. Oh, good point.
Yep. Which I think, I believe in open source. I mean, that's obviously paved the way for me to be able to do a lot of things that I do day to day for work. So I don't have a problem with proprietary software being out there. Of course, I use it daily as well. But I was saying I was trying to figure out if I agreed with the title because technically software has been free for a long time, but I understand where they're going with because the term open source technically took off with Netscape. So
yeah, that's hard to remember that Netscape was on the forefront of that back then. I mean, a lot of people just think about Linux, which Linux was starting to take off about that time as well.
Yeah, and yes, it has. And actually, you could almost put an argument out there it actually won the server wars because look how many Linux servers are out on the internet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and there was a lot of other OpenBSD, NetBSD, FreeBSD were also in that same racket.
Yes. And sometimes I've used those all too for when I have my internet service provider.
Yeah.
I used Linux. I started off with a Windows. I started off with a FreeBSD server for mail and I did not understand it. My friend set it up. You know, I was like, but it was just crazy. You know, some of the stuff, it just took me a while to get my head around it. Anyway, so I ended up going to a Windows mail server eventually I went back to Linux because I finally got Linux around in my head and I loved it. And I was like, this is the best way to go. And I've been an advocate for Linux ever since and free software.
Each, probably just some each people has just, their own strengths and weaknesses. I'm not going to say
sure.
one is better than the other. It's kind of the, you know, same as the media wars of the 80s and the 2000s. Just
look, I'll be the first to tell you, I love Linux desktop, but here I am using Windows and I use a Mac at work. So, I mean, it's just not 100% there. Although depends on what you're doing for what I do. I'm not saying it's not, I mean, I could sit there and if I didn't have some of the apps I needed for work, sure. I could do anything on Linux. You can do anything on Linux. But I don't know.
Well, I mean, look at the birth of some of these smaller microcontrollers and devices like Raspberry Pi, you know, throw Linux on it. You got a pretty robust computer for $35.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's amazing. So yeah, you're not going to throw a Windows server on a Pi and be happy about it. Now, there are some, actually that I take that back. They do have a, Windows, I forget what they call it. It's a mobile version, not mobile, a headless version of Windows for devices like that. But I'm gonna tell you, Unix in itself, the way it's designed, is meant for that kind of device. So it's perfect.
Yeah, it really changed the way that small computer systems like that.
Hey, you saw how we were having a fun time with PowerShell on Friday. Would you like to do PowerShell on a Pi?
No. 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 Actually, I bought another Pi.
Another one? No. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I've been kicking around the idea of getting a second Pi because the first one is doing OSMC and I don't want to, you know, tear it down just to do something else like, oh, I need a controller for this or that. And they were on sale when I went to Fry's to pick up zip ties and a couple of smart light switches. I said, oh, look, here's some Pis. And I also needed a breadboard. So I picked up like an $8 breadboard because I'm soldering together some smaller components. WeMOS. Have you heard of those? They're stackable little controllers. And they come with various shields. This is for my IoT lab at our conference coming up.
I think I have seen that.
The WeMOS, I wish I had one. I could show it to you on camera. It's just off camera, out of reach. But it's just like an inch by inch blue circuit board. Yeah, right there on the printer, Donna. Just grab that whole white USB cable thing. Your headphone jack can reach all the way over there. Okay. If you're on camera and you can see this, this is a WeMOS. And there's actually two components stacked here. There's and I soldered the headers on here. This is what they call the D1 controller. It's an ESP8266 chip.
Oh, I can't see it.
You can't see it?
Oh, there you go.
I'll move it back a little bit so it's in focus too. Just a tiny little thing, runs off USB power. Yeah. And then they have these different components you can slap on the front of them. There's one that has an RGB LED. There's one that's got a push button. They're called shields. This is an OLED shield. So it's got a small resolution. It's like 92 by 128 or something.
You're remaking the Pebble.
Kind of. But when you think about it, the controller in here is reprogrammable. So you could pull up the Arduino development kit and talk to this thing and load up an app to say, all right, congratulations, you're a web server. Or you're going to be put a humidistat on this side and connect this one to a relay so that it turns on something. And these things are dirt cheap. The D1, I believe, is like $2 or $1.50, and the OLED display is like $3.
Hmm.
And
we may have to make a run to Fry's when I come out to your
Well, they don't sell these at Fry's. They're available from other places. They take at least 10 days to get. I'll have a whole bunch of them because we're going to be doing our IoT lab at our conference.
Okay.
But yeah, I've got an RGB light. Jason McKee sent these to me from Seattle. He had a whole bunch of spare ones and said, here, let's get building. unfortunately, I have to tinker around with yet another language I've never played with before to program that thing. I think it's C sharp. But
I thought the language that the Arduinos use wasn't too hard to pick up.
It's not, but it's not anything I've used before. And usually you trip up on the syntax. I don't know. understanding what libraries are available. Fortunately, the WEMA site says, oh, if you're playing around with a shield, you know, this particular shield, whether it's the RGB or the OLED or something else, here are some sample apps and libraries that you can play around with. And they make it easy to get started. So that's what I'm doing, is I'm trying to cobble these things together. And if we're lucky, we're going to share these devices between two different labs, and we could have one embedded OS in there. Right now, it's configured almost exactly like that smart switch on the wall. Well, no, that was going to be on the wall. But you bring it up and says, oh, if I can't find a Wi-Fi signal in 5 seconds, I'm going to go into access point mode. And then you can talk to it from a browser. You make your laptop, tablet, or phone join that access point network.
Right.
And say, no, this is the Wi-Fi you want. And it reconfigures, saves it in the EEPROM. And next time it comes up, it goes, oh, hey, I'm on the same network. It's almost the exact same configuration as you do for any smart device or IoT device around your house, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, well, like the little smart switches. I kept trying to connect to them, and it kept saying 5 gigahertz isn't supported. I'm like, yes, I know, but I have 2.4 devices on my network. Turns out I used an older Android phone.
Yeah.
Put it and forced it to be in 2.4 gigahertz only. Then I was able to program the devices with the Wi-Fi, and then they connected just fine. So it was the app that was complaining.
It's always the software, right? Never the device. Yeah. I did install another smart switch in our bedroom for the ceiling fan, because we're getting into the time of year when it's going to be warm during the day and then cool during the night. And if you leave the fan on, you get kind of chilly. So I want to be able to turn the fan off
in the middle of the night.
Yeah, without getting out of bed.
Turn the light off.
Because it's cold. Well, no, you don't yell at Alexa and say, Alexa, turn the fan off. I'm going to hook it up to an AWS IoT button.
Oh.
Which will then route the request through ServiceNow and turn it off for me. So I got it all planned out. That way, if I'm not around, Donna can still turn the fan on or off.
Well, it'd be easy just to ask Alexa, right?
Well, if there's nobody else around, then you can use Alexa. But if your spouse is sleeping in the middle of the night and you're chilly and you go, Alexa, turn the fan off.
I don't think it'd stop my watch.
Okay.
And she's like, speak out loud. No.
Did we thank our patrons yet? Let's do that.
Who? Those people.
Patrons. We got 3 more articles to cover, and we have not even done this yet. So
yeah, I see some holes in our table.
Yeah, we had 3 leave and 2 join, something like that, over the course of the last month or so. So thank you very much to the previous people who have been supporters of the show for so long. We thank you very much. Hope you come back at some point and find this show valuable. For as little as $1 a show, you can get content, special content, just for our patrons. And the
tell us if
who
it's
are,
something we did.
The people who are still getting this and thanking us with their wallet: Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, John Noble, Chris MC, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Kyle Nishioka, Jorgis Rowan, John Clifford, Gary Lindros, and our newest Night Gig Studios, a.k.a. JT Shea. Thank you very much to you for your contribution. I just love, you know, I'm kind of digging that music the more I listen to it.
Yeah, she put it on your phone and you listen to it on the way.
That wouldn't be a bad ringtone now that you mention it.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
Not sure who I would assign that to. Not sure I want that as my general ringtone.
Your wife, when she goes, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, the Imperial March. That's so romantic.
Yeah.
Craig, after 30 years, I think I like to know what ringtone I should and shouldn't use for my wife.
That would be better for the spouse than, like, Always from Atlantic Star. How about that?
Did you just pull that out of the air?
Yeah, what about it? Is that your song?
Yeah.
Hey, I used to DJ.
We first heard it when we went on our first date, and then after I proposed and she said yes, about 8 and a half months later, she said yes, we turned on the radio, and there it was again. So, that's our song.
Okay. Actually, it was one of my friends' songs at his wedding, but they let it play all the way through. I'm like, I don't think you need to play the entire song.
Sure you do.
Yeah, we had a rough night the night before. No, we were standing around and anyway.
Let's do the media corner thing. We gotta keep moving. I thought this was going to be a short
Welcome
show.
To Blockhead Video. Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
I got to ask when you play Monopoly, do you ever play by the rules, the official rules?
Well, it depends what you say by official rules, because my brother and I used to make up some rules.
Right, everybody does. You adapt them. How much money goes under free parking and all that good stuff. Well... Yeah. There's an upcoming Cheaters Edition of Monopoly. Hasbro will be releasing it this fall. It includes 15 cheat cards that encourage players to do naughty things behind the other players' backs, rewarding them with bonus cash or property if they get away with it, and handcuffed to wear if they get caught.
Hey, naughty- sounds like a government lobbyist job. You get away with it, you're okay.
You too could be a congressman. Quote, we finally decided to embrace our less than honest fans by encouraging them to participate in those iconic yet sometimes unspoken Monopoly moments that occur during family game nights. We used to call, when you started negotiating for the property, you know, somebody had two blues and a green, and you say, I'll give you this much for that with some cash. And we used to do that. We used to do the dirty dealing. We're excited to see that fans. We're excited to see what fans can get away with and how they'll react to the new sneaky twists in the game. Some of the cheats include stealing money from the bank. Oh, nobody does that.
Yeah.
Placing a hotel on one of your pieces of property. Removing a hotel from someone else's property. Oh, come on. Who does that? Well, that's a little underhanded. Taking an extra $100 in Monopoly money from the bank when you pass go. Moving another player's token instead of your own on your turn. Giving someone less money than you owe them. And collecting rent from someone else's property. You deserve it. If you're not keeping track of your property, that's your own fault.
Yeah. You know, I'm surprised in that as it does say some of these cheats include, but I have a feeling there's going to be some bribery in there too. You know, bribe the city council or something.
You killed the dog. we used to knock over the dog. He's just sleeping.
I think this could be fun because that some of the rules we would make, and it's been so long I can't remember what they were, but it was to see how fast we could play the game because it's you know
speed Monopoly.
It's, you know, that it takes a long time. It's just infamous for that. But yeah, I would try and make some rules where things would go faster. But I'm curious to see how the Cheaters Edition would play. I think
my younger brother Paul used to play Monopoly by himself a lot. He just instead of watching a TV show.
That's the definition of Monopoly.
Well, he would have different characters on the board and whatnot. And he'd be keeping it all straight as to who's winning. But he'd have. He'd just pull it out from underneath his bed, and the pieces were in place, and the hotels were in place, and he'd know whose turn it was, and he'd take over and keep playing.
He's a genius because that's what Monopoly is when you're the sole player.
Well, then you can't cheat.
Yeah, so he won. Wait.
Maybe he was schizophrenic. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll let you be the judge of that.
We're so proud of him today.
Right.
If you heard me talk about my younger brother, you know what he does today, but I'm not going to say it here. All right, let's go on to the next article. Creative ways to quit your job. There are a number of them here. We're not going to go through all 30 of them, but we've got quite a few.
I can tell you that I've never really left a job on uneven terms. It's always been
one of these is actually a complimentary thing. This is interesting. There's one that's a cake decorator who has left the job. It says, to the management, Border Force Stansted. Today is my 31st birthday, and I'm having recently become a father, and now I realize how precious life is and how important it is to spend my time doing something that makes me and the other people happy. For that reason, I hereby give notice of my resignation in order that I may devote my time and energy to my family and my cake business, which has grown steadily over the past few years. I wish the organization and my colleagues the best in the future, and I remind you that if you enjoy this cake, you could order more at www.mrcake.co.uk. Sincerely, C. Holmes, Chris Holmes, Mr. Cake. Well, he started his own business and left his old job with a cake. That's nice of him.
Yeah.
How nice. That was all handwritten on the cake with that, you know, kind of black frosting doodad. There's another one where there's a sporting store in a mall where the sales team got fed up with their manager.
Yeah, read the first line on that sign on the wall.
Dear Jamie, since you decided to say cancer is not an excuse.
I think you could pretty much stop right there.
And think it's okay to swear at your employees like you do all the time. We quit. And the letter goes on from Nikki, Jess, and TJ. Mm-hmm. The third one is, we did black out a couple of words, so there. It looks like it's from a Macintosh. It's an error message that would come up on the screen. It says, the designer you treated like has
crap.
Quit unexpectedly. Your company and other employees are not affected. Click renegotiate to discuss terms of your new contract. Click HR to find out just how badly you effed up.
Right.
Click ignore. There's a third button on there, ignore. They didn't tell what to do. That was pretty clever. Now, this one with the bottle that looks like Jack Daniels is actually a resignation letter, but I think the
in the form of a label.
Right. Nino Gupana's resignation letter, employee number 119. Dear Sir Raul, the past 5 years were nothing but awesome. I am forever grateful to Leo Burnett Manila. Actually, that's pretty
nice. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, I'd like to show up and see that on my desk. There is a handwritten two-week notice that is very similar to what the ladies wrote on the...
Somebody
was giving her a hard time. I think the movie Sign Theater one is my favorite, though. Go ahead and read that one.
My boss can change his own damn sign. I quit.
Oh, there was it says hot food inside, so I'm assuming it was a movie theater.
I think there should be a comma there. But that's just me.
At Bed Bath & Beyond, there was a price tag hanging on the New Wave Pro infrared oven that says, here are the feature bullets. Digital control panel. Bullet number two. My boss is a beep. Bullet number three. Comes with extender ring kit. Bullet number four. I'm quitting today. Bullet number five. 12.5 inches high by 15.5 inches wide. $119.99.
You know, I have a feeling that's going to be so subtle, no one would never see it.
Right. You got to be looking to find that. And that's what I love about this, is there's a couple of them that were real subtle. One says, a coworker posted his pictures of himself in random places when he quit. This is the back of a clock. He quit 2 years ago.
That's pretty funny.
Or when a big box retailer worker just can't take it anymore, all the boxes in the grocery aisle are upside down. Lucky Charms, Crave, Reese's Puffs. Oh, wait, the Rice Krispies down there on the second shelf from the bottom are not upside down.
Call him back in and tell him to do his job right this time.
You failed. If you're going to quit. And the road sign one is also very nice. Exit 329 closed. Sucks to be you, but I got fired today, so don't expect any help.
Hey, is that from the guy who called the Hawaii, you know,
the
alarm?
The nuclear alarm. Yeah, very nice.
Oops.
All right, let's round up our hour with the Geek Library, which I believe is this one. Not sure why, but I still like this song. All right, let's not do.
Are you going to just keep on rolling?
Just keep playing theremin things. I don't care.
Yeah.
All right. I think, did you find this one or did I find this? I don't remember anymore.
We found it. How about that?
It was painful. We both
won.
To watch.
We both won.
Did you watch this video?
Yeah.
The creators of that silly homemade Revenge of the Sith remake are tackling Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
It's painful to watch.
Hey, what, the prequel or this?
Both. Both.
Actually, sure, I found this happened. One more entertaining, I think. Yeah, because there's a guy dressed as Padme, but he's trying to do the voice, yes, and everything.
And the wig is terrible, and the, yeah, acting's terrible, and the camera work is terrible.
Again, we're talking about the fan film, not the official movie.
Just in case anybody was wondering or watching this later and doesn't already know, the Philadelphia Eagles have beaten the New England Patriots 41-33.
Wow. I know some happy people tonight.
I was rooting for the Eagles. I didn't want to see. Anyway.
Actually, you know what? One of our listeners.
It was a good game. Yes.
Posted on Facebook. This is the big prop. Wait. Back up. Well, I'm just going to tell you. One of our listeners posted on Facebook that him and his wife were at a Super Bowl party at a bar or something like that. I'm not sure exactly where they were at. And his wife had a Cowboys jacket on and a Texas.
Yes.
A Texans t-shirt. And some Eagles fans, drunk Eagles fans, punched her in the face and broke her nose.
What the heck?
I know, right? I can't believe people would just do that. I mean, well, drunk, yes, I am, but I'm still surprised. Problems. I can't believe it.
No, that's just wrong. Did they get arrested?
He said they were arrested. They're in jail.
Good.
So the stupid Eagle fans had to break her nose. They couldn't even watch the game now. Which, you know, that in itself, screw them.
I have a little better news.
Yeah.
So I'm wearing this Northern Michigan University sweatshirt today. It's my alma mater. It's where Donna and I met, and that's where Lisa's going to school. Oh, TMI. But, you know, we're all friends on Technorama.
Sure.
And we just walked into the grocery store, and the guy says, "Hey, NMU, I was there for a little while."
NMU, too, too.
Our Marquette, Michigan, right? I said, yeah. I said, he said, "Yeah, I went to the Jacob Eddy Skills Center." I said, "That's pretty cool. I got some friends who did that too." He said something like, "I wasn't there of my own choice." I thought, well, that's an odd thing to say. And then,
wait, go Hurst?
Maybe he was incarcerated at the prison, and that was his rehabilitation. I don't know. I didn't want to pry or anything, but seemed like a nice guy, so I let it be and said, "Have a nice weekend." And we get a little further into the grocery store, and this big guy goes, "Northern Michigan University, we used to play them in football." And he told me his college, which I can't remember. He said, "They clobbered us."
As they should.
I said, "Well, sorry to hear that." He said, "Yeah, and then we had a 14-hour bus ride home." Yikes. Boy. That's a bad weekend.
Yeah. That sucks.
But anyway, he said, you never see anybody wearing these smaller college shirts. It was just so odd that I've worn this before, but nobody ever says anything. It's just, it must have been, maybe it was just Super Bowl Sunday friendliness going on, but.
Hey, wait, is it cold enough for you to be wearing a hoodie?
In the morning it is.
Really? What's temperature?
Yeah, and a night. About 50 when I get up.
Oh.
Gets up to about 77 in the day, which is nice.
It was like 40 today. 46, I'm sorry.
That was your high?
And rainy.
Oh, darn.
It's one thing to be cold. It's another cold. Another thing when it's cold and windy. And then another thing when it's cold, windy, and rainy.
Yeah. We used to call that, it's time to go work on the boat weather.
Boat?
Our boat, to get it ready for like right before Memorial Day when we started up scuba diving charter season. May in Upper Peninsula, Michigan ain't no fun.
Why is it not?
It's cold and windy and rainy.
And rainy.
And you're trying to paint the boat or get the engines ready or.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't the kind of days that rouse you out of bed and say, "Yeah, Dad, let's go.
I'm ready to work."
He'd say, "Okay, let's break for lunch." We go to the local grocery store where they had those pre-baked greasy chickens, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then the sand would be blowing into our chicken. Yeah. greasy, sandy chicken for lunch. It gets cold.
Yeah. Just what you want.
Yeah. Fun. Hey, by the way, memories.
If you're following along, I am now in season 7 of Deep Space Nine.
They had 7 seasons?
What? All of them, actually, all Star Trek ones did, except for Enterprise.
Oh, okay.
And technically Discovery, but it's still in production.
Let's hope it has 7 seasons.
Yeah.
All right, that takes us to the end of the show. We are going to round it out. Look at that, right at the 1 hour mark for the recording there. A little longer for you people on the video. Thank you very much again. Let's ask the question, would you have taken the red pill or the blue pill, and why? Now, which one brings you into the, or breaks you out of the Matrix?
I'll take the Tide Pod, sir.
No, no, we're not endorsing that on this podcast again.
No, I can't. You know what? I keep seeing that around, and I'm like, who in their right mind would eat those things?
Darwin Awards.
Yeah.
They don't eat them. They just suck on them as long as they can. It's sort of like the cinnamon challenge.
Doesn't matter. I'm not going to. It's like siphoning gasoline from your car.
Yeah,
you know, it's not fun either.
I like to think our listeners and viewers are a little smarter than that.
Yeah.
We don't need to remind them every time. All right. That takes us to the end. Thanks for ending on such a happy note there, Craig.
Well, hey, we'll let Darwin's theory take its course.
We appreciate your support as well. If you want to get in touch with us again, go to the listener line, 707-530-2428. We've also got an Amazon page. Did you know that? Go to the Technorama page at truckjet.com/Technorama. We got some products and recommendations of books we like to read and things we mentioned on the show. You know, I should update that because there's a couple of cool gadgets that I've been buying that I'd like to share with the world. So go over there and click on our Amazon link, and we get a little kickback if you do buy something from there, just like the other Amazon affiliates out there. Just think about it. See what we like to play with and tinker with, and I'll put my latest Raspberry Pi kit on there. You can see all what LEDs and whatnot it came with. Give us an email.
Podcasting for Dummies on there?
I think it is. Well, we're out of time. Give me a binary high five.
101.